three things that we want to learn from these passages, three verses. Number one is faith without deeds. Okay. So the first lesson we want to learn is faith without deeds. You might be asking, okay, how is it possible? What does it mean to have faith that doesn't save? And that's exactly what James is talking about. James is talking about a Christian faith that leads you to hell. So another way to put it is, James is talking about a Christian, there is a Christian faith that is possible to be Christian, I guess, in many senses of the word, and still end up in hell. Okay? And I want to tread lightly on this lesson because this is the particular passage and a lesson that I've taught and preached before. And the end result was that the following Sunday, the congregation shrunk. Okay? So I want to tread lightly. Okay? Please know that I'm not talking at you. I'm not talking down to you. I'm talking with you, hopefully to encourage. Right? With that being said, there is a faith that is useless and is dead. And James describes that as a faith where it's all mental and it's all verbal. It is a faith, if you will, that, at least in the Asian culture, we're very good at. Right? We're very good at. And everyone from my father to various Bible study teachers and pastors that I've met, they always told me, in the Asian church, right, we're always so easily impressed by what people wear when they come to church, what they drive to church, how much offering they give when they're at church, what kind of prayers or how long they pray when they're at church, what kind of titles or positions they have. And so we're very good at church, playing church. This is what Johnny and I talk about when we say we're playing church. Right? The literal Greek word for that is hypocrite. Okay? In the Greek, the word hypocrite, right? Everyone knows what that means, right? It means to say one thing and do another, right? Hypocrite. In the Greek culture 2,000 years ago, the word hypocrite, it literally means actor. Okay? So the word we use as actors, like movie stars and, you know, people that are on dramas and stuff, that's what you call them, hypocrites, right? And so in essence, what James is saying is don't be a hypocrite. Don't be a Christian hypocrite. Which is very, very, which is kind of his way of saying, don't play church. Because that kind of faith, we can trick ourselves into thinking, I'm playing church. We get from playing church to, you know what? I think I'm a Christian. And it's maddening. It's maddening because, at least from my perspective as this, in our generation, we look back at our parents' generation and we see so many mistakes. We see so many mistakes. Right? We see people saying, you know, getting in fights like, oh, I gave this much amount of money in the offering basket, therefore I deserve to be an elder. I deserve to be a deacon. You know? Or another thing is, you know, oh, in the Korean church, we don't want to offend people, so we call everybody deacons. And so how do you differentiate between the real deacons and just the regular deacon? Oh, well, in the Korean church, we have to come up with a new title, and we call them ordained deacons, which is, according to the Bible, pretty ridiculous because you don't need to, you know, like, for example, you don't call Reverend Choi ordained Pastor Choi. Right? It's like, it's understood. He's the senior pastor. He is an ordained man, right? But these are examples, right? And so we look at the previous generation, look at that, and like, oh man, that's so bad. Problem is, guess what? We're starting to do the same thing. I'm starting to see it in our generation, and it's scary. and it's depressing. It's maddening. It's frustrating, right? It gets me angry a lot. Because our generation is starting to start fights. And so I'm starting to hear fights within the young English congregations around the area. Where young guys, our generation, right? Your former youth group older brothers and sisters, your former youth group teachers, what they're doing now is they're starting to do the same thing that our parents did. Why? I think it's because possibly, I dare to say, stepping out a little bit, is because they've either never read James or they've never had the pastor go through the book of James. And James is saying right here, hey, guess what? It doesn't matter how many songs you sing. It doesn't matter how many times you recite the Apostles' Creed. It doesn't matter even if you memorize the Apostles' Creed in Greek and you say it every week. Or as my dad would like to say, he says it in Korean, so I got to translate it in my mind. What you do with your flesh is of very little importance. What you do with your flesh is very little importance. Playing church. Or as my mentor once said, don't just go to church. Be the church. In the Bible, the church is never a location, it is people. The church is an identity. It's never a location, it's never a building. Right? And so here, James says, faith without deeds. There is a difference between acknowledging and saying with our mouth, yes, there is a God. Oh God, you're awesome. And actually believing it in our hearts. Because if you think about it, God is very secure in his identity. He's never confused on who he is. He always knows at any given moment in time or ever in all of eternity, God is never confused on who he is. So you know what that means? That means, right, for example, that means that he doesn't need us to remind him of who he is. So when we say, oh God, you're awesome, okay, he doesn't need us to remind him that. He knows this, right? He knows this. I'm awesome. Yes, I am, right? And as Pastor John Piper once said to an astonished 24,000 crowd of college students one time, that Jesus is the only person in the universe who can say, I am awesome, and not be prideful about it. Because that'd be an absolute, perfectly truthful statement. Right? He doesn't need us to remind him. He doesn't need us to acknowledge him. God never says in the Bible, acknowledge me. I need your approval. I need your acknowledgement. He doesn't care about our acknowledgement. He cares more for relationship. And so there is... this is what James is saying when he says faith without deeds and faith that is useless. The second lesson we see is words without love. And so this faith and deeds, okay, or actions. Okay, what use is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but has no works? Okay, so this works. Okay, what is he talking about? Okay, it's talking about a couple different things. But one thing that's majorly that we have to understand is when James says works, he's also talking about works in love. Okay, he's talking about works in love, meaning like okay. So he gives this example, right? If you say that you love Jesus, but you do nothing, your actions, you have no actions of love, especially towards the church, then your words betray you for who you really are. If you say, I love Jesus, and Jay says, you know what? My parents are going out of town. They're going to another country for 3 weeks. And you go, okay, I hope you're well taken care of, and I hope your house doesn't burn down. And that's it. And you do nothing about it. You got to ask yourself, okay, am I actually acting in love? Am I actually doing something? I say I love Jesus, and I hear a brother in this kind of situation. Yes, he's not going to go hungry per se, but there is an opportunity for him to do so. Right? doesn't it make more sense that you hear about it, and instead of just saying, oh yeah, Jay, I hope you don't starve, that you actually do something about it? That's what I was amazed when certain members, I don't want to put it on the internet, right? But certain members I heard on a, just a random conversation, you know, they say, oh yeah, I stop by his house every day after work. Put me to shame. You know? Kind of put a mirror in front of my face going, oh man, what have I been doing? Right? And so these actions, these works that James is talking about, it's talking about specifically about works of love. This one ancient pastor, he said it like this on this in the commentary about this passage. He said, faith without love avails nothing and is ultimately dead. Okay, translation, faith without love is dead and worthless. That's what he's saying. He's saying, if you say you have faith but you have no love, then it's worthless. Your faith is nothing. And James gives us that that example, that real life example in verse 15. And so no matter what we say with our mouths, and no matter what we think in our minds about God, if it isn't backed up by our actions, James says, you're useless. You're lying to yourself. You're tricking yourself. You're fooling yourself. And the scariest thing about the Bible, especially when Jesus comes back, is that in Matthew 7, there will be, on that final day of judgment, many, many, many people who thought themselves Christians. They will be in for a rude awakening. And I do not want any of us to be in that crowd. Because Jesus says very carefully, straight up, he says, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not, ... right? They plain religion, right? Now, don't get this twisted. James isn't trying to say, okay, in order for you to be saved, you have to say it, you have to think it, and then you got to do it. Meaning, it's all about what you do. And then you can earn your way to salvation. That's what James is not saying. James is not saying that. Okay? James is, remember, the original crowd. James is speaking this to the church. James is speaking to believers. People who say they love Jesus. And so James, what he's coming from is, if you are a Christian, or another way to say it is, because you are saved, therefore, do it like this. Therefore, act this way. Meaning, you don't sing songs to God so that he can love you. You sing songs to God because you love him. You see what I'm saying? You don't sing songs to God so that you will receive his love. You sing it because you love him. Right? Or another way, right? Elliot won't buy things for Caitlin so that she can like him. He's already got it. But what he's going to do is he's going to buy things for her because he's already got it. He's to show it, to reflect that reality. Right? I'm not going to buy flowers for Peggy because I want her to like me. I already got it in the bag. What I do is I get her flowers because I already like her. You see what I'm saying? Because that already exists. It's the same way. So because God already, we already have it, it moves you to action. So faith, in essence, it is passive and active. It's passive in that we can't earn it ourselves. But it is active in that once we receive it, it moves you to action. It has to put movement in your joints. It has to. If the faith that you say you profess, if the faith that you say you have only puts actions or emotion in your jaw and your voice, I would highly encourage you to examine what kind of faith do you have. This is not to say, again, if you're that kind of person, you're not welcome. I'm not saying that. Right? Our church is a hospital, not a museum. We accept everybody. We're not going to let you leave the way you came, but you know, we come in. But if that is the kind of faith that we have, let's start thinking, why? Why? And so words without love. Another pastor, 200 years ago, I believe, about, he's an American pastor, he said it like this: there is no way to show we really believe in Christ except by being diligent in good works. And here's a kicker: from gospel motives for gospel purposes. Let me say that again. I'm going to put that on Facebook. That's a good one, right? There is no way to show that we really believe in Jesus except by being diligent. You know what diligent means, Harvard? Being diligent? Being diligent means you're not lazy. It's the opposite of being lazy. All right? That's the best way I can think of. Being diligent is the opposite of lazy. Okay? So there is no way of showing that we really believe in Jesus except by not being lazy in good works. Well, what kind of good works? Good works from gospel motives. You like that? From gospel motives, meaning it's basically what I just said, right? Because Jesus saved us. From gospel motives, that's a gospel motive, and for gospel purposes. Because Jesus saved me, therefore I'm going to do this. Because Jesus saved me, therefore I'm going to go do that. Right? For example, this coming up Saturday, we're going to go to the Lamb Center, and we're going to meet it's in Fairfax County, and you're going to think, okay, Fairfax County is one of the most richest counties in the country. There is no poor people here. Oh, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. And so we're going to go there on Saturday, and we're going to give ourselves an opportunity to put these things into action. We say we love Jesus all we want, but until we do it, I think we're falling into the first category that James is talking about. Mainly in that we just talk about it, we think about it, but that's all we do. Which is, at the end, absolutely useless. The last lesson. Faith that is dead. There is the real possibility that we may have a faith that is dead or worthless. And as I've said before, James is not trying to say, hey, do these things so that you can be saved. But James is saying, do these things because you are saved. Or as D.L. Moody said, right, a famous evangelist from Chicago, he said, we don't work towards the cross, we work from the cross. Right? We already got it. We got the cross. We're already there. And because of that, we work now. Right? Or Paul says it in Ephesians. Ephesians 2, 8 and 9. Right? That's one thing that, when we were growing up, we had a lot of memory verses. I mean, we don't do that much anymore. We should maybe bring that back. Right? A lot of memory verses. A lot of memory verse exercises and games and stuff like that. Ephesians 2, 8, 9 was one of those. It says, for by grace you have been saved, and this not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not as a result of works, so that no one may boast. Okay? And go, so we memorize that. That's good, right? It says, you are saved by grace of God, not by anything that you do. Cool. But in the verse 10, it says, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand, so that we should walk in them. In other words, it's this. God has saved us to good works. That's what one professor said. God has saved us, not so that we can be, we're saved, awesome, cool, what do we do now? No. God has saved you to do good works. Right? Or as Pastor John Piper once said, the most worthless thing in the universe is a person who has been saved by God and is refusing to obey God and does nothing with his life. Most worthless thing. Because God's already saved him, but he refuses to do anything. That's why I made that little comment earlier, right? Somebody asked, hey, what church is Peter going to? And is he going to do something? And I said, yes, he is going to do something. because our family doesn't believe in useless Christians. This is the passage. Right? Don't be a useless Christian. The Apostle John wrote it like this in the book of, in 1 John. He said, "Let us not love in word or tongue, but in truth and love." Right? And I think that just kind of cements the whole lesson. I mean, it's a pretty simple lesson, right? It's not complicated. You love Jesus, do something about it, right? Or another way I like to put it, you say you love Jesus, prove it. Prove it, right? And so in conclusion, a couple questions that I want to ask. Are we just going to church, or are we being the church? Because honestly, just going to church is easy. You either jump in your car and drive yourself there, or you get a ride there, walk into a building. Problem is, according to the Bible, that's nothing. You're not going to church. The Bible never has that phrase. And the second question is this. Are we aware of our fellow brothers and sisters? Are we aware of the church? Are we aware of the needs? Physical, spiritual, emotional. Are we aware? I think possibly that is the best way we become a better welcoming church. That we become more aware of our body. All right. A couple of things. And so, let's pray.